this is the least amount of preparation I've ever done on purpose. Not to say that I haven't prepared, I have show notes, but I tried to record this podcast yesterday and I felt like I was racing through it. Oh man, guess what I just did, guys? I'll take a picture of this. Oh man. I used to use a mirror, like a hand mirror that you would use to check the back of your head. And that was like the anchor to the suction cup mount that I use to mount the microphone for the podcast, which is just a Zoom H1. It's a very small handheld recorder. Looks sort of like a regular microphone that you could hold in your hand. If I was holding it in front of you and I was trying to interview you on the street, you might not notice. You're going to hear a little bit of popping now because I'm not going to do any editing here. I'm trying to remount this. So what happened was we moved and I lost that hand mirror. And I know it's around here somewhere. I've seen it. So I was like, I'll just use my tablet. I had a Lenovo tablet. It was like an 8-inch tablet. It didn't cost that much, maybe $100. And it's probably worth like $30 now. Well, before this little thing. But I used the suction cup mount and I got a really good fix on it, which is the first time and I've used it before. But I must have got a really good fix on it because it cracked the screen. And so soldier down, Black Hawk down. Well, that's something I didn't plan on talking about. What's funny is that I got this tablet when my laptop stopped working, and if you remember a couple episodes ago, I told you that my laptop mysteriously started working again, and so I haven't used the tablet since then, basically. So maybe this is just a sign of I've got too much shit, too many toys. Speaking of toys, I was at Rocky's last night, Rocky's Pizza Ring in Beaver Creek, Ohio, which is one of the first shows I ever participated in. I can't even say it's one of the first shows I ever participated in. It was like one of the first shows I ever heard about and thought, I want to participate in that, and then I did. I remember hearing about it before I ever started doing comedy from some people I was doing improv with. Karen Jaffe, who's been on the show, and Dave Brinkman. We're talking about it at class one day, and I was like, wow, that sounded amazing. And man, Rockies can be amazing. It was, it's one of those things that every once in a while, a free show can still be a good show. Now, I'd say Rockies has had a huge evolution because it's been going on, gosh, I mean, off and on. I mean, they took a break for maybe a year, 6 months or so. But I'd say it's been a once a month show for almost the whole time I've been a comedian, which is about 5 years. And it hasn't always been a great show every single month, but there's been some real epic shows there. And it was a real integral part of my starting out in comedy because it was a regular show and it was right down the street from my house. It's a small room. It only holds probably 50 or 60 people comfortably. But they come and they get pizza and they get discount beer and you perform next to a claw machine and a Hydro Thunder machine. Your backdrop is an American flag and glass. And we did it for a while. We had the backdrop put up where we just put a black curtain up behind so you couldn't see straight through the comedians. But there's something gritty about not doing that. And the Hydro Thunder machine and the claw machine definitely add a certain je ne sais quoi to the whole thing. So I went last night and I saw some comedians perform. I only stuck around for the first half of the show and it was picking up steam. But I realized a couple of things. I realized how hard it is to start doing comedy. And also how hard it is to follow somebody who has been doing comedy for a long time when you're just starting. It's not that, and it's also, I think the whole Rockies audience is sort of well-trained. They're kind of, I don't want to say comedy snobs, but for people that are getting a show for free, they have a high opinion of what is or isn't funny. So what I noticed last night was that the first handful of comedians, regardless of how funny their jokes were, really just didn't get the traction. And then Mike Canestero goes up, and it was the first one to really get any kind of traction. And even he, I think, found some difficulty in the lack of warm up. And it's not that the audience didn't get warm up. They were warmed up by Tim Lucas, who's a very funny guy. I mean, like, if Tim had closed out the show, he would have gotten 10 times the response he got for opening the show. And I think that's what has happened at Rockies in a way, is that previous shows have raised the bar so high that it'd almost be better to have three professional comedians than a showcase of 8 to 10 local comedians. Because it's like, no matter what, the audience doesn't really get going until the fifth comedian or so. But I didn't do any time. I just wanted to watch a couple people, and it was fun. I had a good time just watching. Got to see my buddy Joe Young go through a couple different phases of comedy. And we had talked for about an hour before the show, and I was just kind of giving him some ideas of how to approach comedy. And he went up on stage and took almost everything I said into his act as far as searching the space and trying to find a difference between being robotic and really in the moment and authentic. And he definitely shined as an authentic comedian. For the first time last night, I felt like he was actually being himself on stage, which is something that may or may not serve him well as a comedian, but being able to do the different phases. So this is what I want to work on this week for myself, is doing my act as several different characters. And probably the only way I could get you to understand that is for me to play snippets of those acts after I've done it, but it'll come through in the voice for sure. And not as different characters, as like, not like one of them's gonna be Hillbilly Bob and he's gonna do Adrian's act, but as a hillbilly. And I'm not going to try to do an English accent as I do my act. That would be in very poor taste. I think more of in terms of gears. You know, you have somebody that's turned up and really excited, and then you have a much more subdued individual, and then maybe you have somebody who seems a little bit touched, you know, a little bit off. Those are the characters I'm talking about, and they're all versions of me, and different ways I have been or may act depending on my mood. I'll let you know how it goes. Man, what a week. Last week, we left on Tuesday. I left on Tuesday morning. I left on Tuesday morning at 5 a.m. from my house. I picked up Steve Sabo in Toledo, Ohio at 7:30. We drove to Grand Forks, North Dakota, which was 16 hour. No, it was about a 14 and a half hour drive. Then we drove. Well, we got there a day early, which was nice because the show was in the hotel, so we got to stay in a pretty nice hotel. I'd give it 3 stars. I would give it 4 stars, actually. It was a nice hotel. It was a nice showroom. It had just been renovated, and looked very nice. And so we got to come in on Tuesday night and then sleep. We got there like, I don't know, 10 or 11 at night, and because we lose some time going that direction. And then we got to hang out and just sleep all day on Wednesday before the show. And then we had to leave early Wednesday morning or Thursday morning for the next show because that was 12 hours away. So it was a couple of really long legs, but that's why you take two comics on the road so nobody has to do all the driving. I find that I can't do all the driving anymore. It's just too much. And with my back in the shape that it's in, I need to be able to split that up. So I had to actually cancel a gig. Not because it was too far from where I'm at, but the gig before it was too far away from the next gig. And it would have been me doing all the driving and then driving back. It would have been like 20 hours of driving in 36. And that's just too much. Too much for any human being. If I hadn't had the back surgery, I'd do it without thinking about it. Or if I could fly. But there's just some of these places we do comedy. Some of the best places to do comedy are nowhere near an airport. Grand Forks was awesome. I wasn't feeling very good, and that was the first night I think I've done comedy without drinking a drop. I know it's not the first time, but it was the first time in a long time that I was actively thinking, I could drink, but I'm not going to. Mostly because I knew I had to get up so early. And I told myself I didn't want to drink this weekend. And it was a good decision. Then we went from Grand Forks to Lemoyne, Keystone, Ogallala area. I think it's officially it's Lemoyne, but it was close to Keystone, and the hotel was in Ogallala. And that's in Nebraska. And that was a good show too. In fact, that show was surprisingly good. I mean, we did not know what to expect, and it was electric. I mean, the people that were there, I'm looking to make sure I'm still recording. Oh, thank goodness. I had this fear for a second that none of this was being recorded. It was one of those weird situations where the show starts before the sun goes down, and the place has got a lot of glass, so it was pretty well lit in the room when I started. Everybody could see everybody. And I find that comedy is best in the dark. But, I started my act, and within 5 minutes, the whole front row filled in. People came from the back of the room to sit down. And I think one of the concerns in a bar, and this place had a stage, but it was more like for an acoustic singer. The backdrop on the stage was a television. So maybe that's what really the stage gets used for the most. But it was a small stage, but everything went really, really well. Small ceiling, low ceiling, and the people were sitting right up front. I think the concern for audiences in a place like that is that the comedian's going to make fun of the audience. And while I will occasionally talk to the audience, I always try to make sure that I'm the butt of the joke. And if I do isolate somebody, I try to make sure that anything I take away from them, I give it back to them and then some. That's just kind of a rule of crowd work for me. I know certain comedians that would probably eviscerate, people on the stage or from the stage in the audience, but that's just not my style. But I know that that's a concern of people. I'm knocking everything around here, guys. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do this in one take. And so I think once they realized that I'm not going to do that, they were felt comfortable coming and sitting right up front. And it was a great show, sold lots of t-shirts, and then we were off from Lemoyne, Keystone, Ogallala area. We went to Sheridan, Wyoming, which was a very, very short trip of only about 5 or 6 hours. Maybe it was 7 or 8. But, anything less than 12 seems short these days. And another great show. Wow, Sheridan was really great because it was like 230 people in a hotel, banquet room, big stage. The lighting and the sound was a little bit off, but it still was a great show, and I feel like everybody enjoyed it a little bit more than maybe even I could because of the lighting and the sound issues. I was a little bit in my own head. But had a great open and a great close, and I met some really nice people. Shout out to Reverend Donna and Tisha G. Thank you guys for coming to the show. We went to Scotts Bluff, Nebraska, after Sheridan, Wyoming. And Scotts Bluff is an interesting place. We parked our car right in front of an old comedy jazz club. It's been closed for a long time, but the marquee looks like you could open up this place tomorrow and have a comedy and jazz club. Now, I don't know how well a comedy and jazz club ever would be in Scotts Bluff, but the comedy show that we did sold out, and so they moved it to a different room in the Elks Lodge. No brag, Elks Lodge, represent. And sold more tickets and filled it up, and it was huge. It was huge. And it was a great show. And it was another one of those shows where you never know how it's going to go. That's how almost every show this past week could have had the potential of being a train wreck or a nightmare. But they were all fantastic. I mean, it's really hard to say because I say whenever you do one or two or three or four shows in a row or back to back each night, one of them sticks out. One of them has to be the best. But I can honestly say they were all great, but for different reasons and different categories of reasons. But if I had it to do over again, even though it was an extreme amount of driving, it was totally worth it, professionally and monetarily. And that's the first time that I think I've ever been able to say that on the way home, even though it was like a 16-hour drive home, I was smiling almost the entire way. Almost couldn't believe. Like, sometimes I can't believe I'm a comedian. Sometimes I feel like this whole life is just a dream. But then I pinch myself, and then I get these weird bruises, and that's another story. I don't think I told you guys this, but I switched. I finally switched cell phone service. I'm with Verizon now. And this isn't a plug for anybody. Right now, I have my only complaint for Verizon is too many emails. But I should have given them a different email address, right? I could probably send it to a different folder or something so I don't see all these Verizon emails. But other than that, it's been great. And I'll say this right off the bat. I cannot tell a difference in call quality, in call clarity. I cannot tell a difference between Republic Wireless and Verizon in call clarity. However, I think the people on the other side of the phone can. And I don't know if that matters to me, but I like the phone. I got a Droid Max 2, and I think I pay $65 a month for this for 3 gigs of data, and everything else is kind of included. And it was weird because I bought the phone online, and then when I went into the store to pick it up, they gave me the same phone, but they sold me on a completely different package for the same amount of money, but even less restrictions. So I don't even have a contract. If I decide to quit with Verizon, I just owe them for the phone. And I was going to buy the phone outright, but it didn't cost me anything extra to not buy the phone outright. So I don't even know if I understand how this all works. But in any case, I got the phone. And yeah, so happy with Verizon right now. The customer service that I got when I went in the store was really good. And just that the guy that helped me, the kid that helped me, the gentleman that helped me, his name was Zach. Was just one of these people that gave the impression that he enjoyed doing what he does. He wasn't like an exceptional conversationalist or a really caring human being. He just kind of gave off the impression that he got a kick out of doing what he did, and I appreciated that. And it was very painless, and he explained everything. Even if I didn't understand it as well as I think I do, I guess I'll know when I see my first bill if I understand everything. But yeah, I was just thrilled top to bottom with the customer service. Because the worst thing is that if you're going to pay more for a service, you don't want to go into that company and have somebody that acts like they don't like their job. It's probably my number one complaint about anything is people that are helping you or their job is to help you, but they act like they're not being helped by their own company or helping you is so far down on their list of priorities that it's like, well, why did you get a job doing this? Maybe that's another story too. Anyway, I still have 2 lines of service with Republic Wireless for my son. He is on a $10 plan, and my mom, who doesn't need or use data on the road, she is on a $10 plan too. And I think I might bring him over to Verizon, but we'll see. I don't know what the family plan. I think that's how it becomes the most affordable, but if I'm paying for it all, it doesn't seem like it's like that much more affordable. I think I'm actually paying a lot less right now, but I'd like for them to have better service if I find out that this is overall better service. Right now, I don't want my son, who's 13, I'm not concerned with him having data at all. He's not driving, so he doesn't need GPS. He's not like roaming the streets. He can make a call or text at any time of day, and he can use the internet when it's on Wi-Fi. He can download his games when he's on Wi-Fi, and he's gotten pretty adept at finding Wi-Fi, wherever he goes if he wants it. So I looked over at the tablet and I'm looking at the screen. Looks like somebody threw a rock at it. I should have known that was going to happen. I mean, I don't know what I thought the screen was made out of, but I also felt like this suction cup wasn't that strong. Right now I have it suctioned to a dry erase board, which was like an infinitely better choice from the beginning. sometimes it falls down. You'll hear that in a couple episodes that it'll unsuction and fall down, and you may hear that at any second now. But so far, based on the longevity of how long it stayed stuck up there, it was a much better choice from the start. I'm so stupid. Next week, I'll be in Virginia Beach with Bert Kreischer, my hero. I say that figuratively and literally. If you haven't listened to any of the past episodes, if this is your first episode, go back and listen to The Best Week Ever, and you'll have a little bit more insight into why Bert Kreischer is my hero. But besides that, if you're not going to do that, which I do suggest you do if you haven't listened, I suggest you go back and listen to all the episodes if you haven't listened. It would be a great way to follow the journey from the start, because I'll tell you this, the number one compliment I've been getting lately is that the sound quality is better. And I don't know if that's a tip of the hat to my voice or to the editing or to sitting still and not moving around. But I know it's an evolution, and I appreciate you guys for, I don't know why anybody's listening to me right now, but I do appreciate the fact that you are listening greatly. So it's my job to try to put out a high quality product. And I learned all of that and got the motivation to do all of that from listening to guys like Bert Kreischer. I think the first time I heard Bert Kreischer on a podcast, he was a guest on Joe Rogan's podcast. And I knew who Bert Kreischer was because I'm a comedian, but I didn't know he had a podcast, and I'd never listened to his podcast. But that's how podcasting sort of works. You find a podcast, whatever the first podcast you ever listen to, and then you find out it's a format that you enjoy for whatever reason, and then it's sort of like you can exhaust your listening. So if you find one podcast and you start listening to all of the episodes, you go back to the beginning, you listen to every episode, whatever type of format, whether it's Serial or Joe Rogan or Marc Maron, you can find these different episodes. And so that's how I started. I started with Bill Burr, was the first podcast I ever listened to. Then he was a guest on Joe Rogan's podcast, and it was 3 hours long. And so I went and listened to Joe Rogan's podcast when he had Bill Burr on before. So I went and searched, because Joe Rogan at that point had like 200 and some episodes, 300 and some episodes. So I went back to like a year and a half earlier when Bill Burr had been on before, listened to that. And then I was like, well, let me look for other comedians that I like. So I just started searching the Joe Rogan catalog, which is all available for free online, for comedians that I liked, and found tons. And then I exhausted that. And then I started taking recommendations from friends. And when I found Bert, he was just a guest, and it was just such a great story that I went and found Bert's podcast and started listening to his podcast, mostly just when he had a guest on that I would like. But now I'm pretty much in every episode listener of Bert's podcast. And that's awesome to me that I get to do what my heroes do. It's like poker in that if you're playing poker, you're doing what your heroes do. You can even sit down at the same table as your heroes if you have enough money to get in the game. But comedy, it's kind of like you have to be funny enough to get in the room. But to have a podcast and to be able to go on stage and work with your heroes like I'm about to do this week, is awesome, especially when that hero had an integral part in you getting the opportunity to be where you are today. It's because I got to open for Bert Kreischer that I got seen in a positive light by his fans, by a club manager who happened to be the booker for 16 other clubs, 15 other clubs. But it was a real breakthrough moment, and I feel like I owe Bert and his audience a huge debt of gratitude for being so awesome in front of kind of an audition that I didn't even consider an audition. To me, I was more excited to be able to open for Bert than I was anything that day. And that day ended up changing my life. It was probably the biggest day I've ever had in comedy, in my comedy career. And it was just top to bottom a great day. So now I get to go into round two of this. And I didn't get to like really, like I had, didn't all sink in. It took a couple days for what had happened that day to sink in. And so I really want to take this week and make sure I get a chance to thank Bert and his audiences for being such awesome people, because he's the kind of comedian that really does bring his audience. There might be a handful of people that show up this week that don't know in advance who Bert Kreischer is. And that's the dream. That's why you do a podcast. That's why you put stuff out there for free. And as you've heard me say before, that my goal for 2016 is to give away as much as I can for free. And that's not because it's not disingenuous. It's literally because this whole thing works best as a shared experience. And it works even better when people are coming specifically to see you. And so why wouldn't I want to share myself on as many levels as I see my heroes sharing themselves? And Bert is one of those guys that shares himself completely and authentically. And I highly recommend that you go to BertBertBert.com and get his podcast, The BertCast. And you can find it by searching BertCast on iTunes and Stitcher. And listen to it. It's great. It's great. I really recommend. I think he had Shane Moss on recently. And that was a good episode. And it's always fun. He does it from the man cave at his house. So you always hear these interruptions with his kids coming in and stuff like that. And I think that's just a really interesting aspect to the podcast. But if you listen to Bert's podcast, you will hear what I think I inherited from him, or maybe it's just what we have in common. And that's when we interview somebody, we have the ability to have somebody that we really like on our podcast and still only talk about ourselves. So I'm hoping I get a podcast with Bert this week. I'm not going to make any promises, but I'm hoping I can at least get a short interview. It would be the second. So it would be the biggest thing to ever happen to me in my comedy podcasting career would be to get to an interview with Bert. So cross our fingers for that, guys. He's just an amazing human being, and he's super friendly. And so, just getting to hang out with him the first time I ever did, which was at the Dayton Funny Bone, was one of the highlights of my comedy career. And I can honestly say since that day, things have just been getting better. Sans back surgery, but even that seems to be, I'm pulling through. Still don't have full range of motion in my right leg, but it's not as bad as it was. For a while, it was like clap, clap, clap. Every time I would put my right foot down, you'd hear the if you're on the balls of your feet, that part of my foot would clap down on the ground because I couldn't really control the speed at which it would hit the ground. But now I'm able to control it so it doesn't clap as loud. So that to me means that I'm getting the range of motion and muscle back in the calf. Like if I go to flex my right leg, it just doesn't feel as strong as my left leg. It feels sort of like it's asleep, but not like it did before the surgery. The surgery definitely woke up my leg. It went from being about, it was probably 50% asleep before the surgery. And then as soon as I had the surgery, it woke up to like 75. But that part of getting it from 75 back to 100 is going to be a very slow process, they say. And not even as slow as it would be one day. It wouldn't come back to normal. This was way back in the day. But they are hoping by fall. I'm hoping by fall. I'm hoping by next week. But the surgery has to take, and so that means no running or exercising until fall. And that's just what I'm going to have to deal with. So, either way, Virginia Beach this week, be there Thursday night. Oh, here's, I just got this information. So I'll be there Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night with Bert. And then Sunday night, they're doing a local showcase, which I'll get the headline. So not only is it my first Funny Bone weekend as a feature act. Now I've done feature nights at more times than I can count for Funny Bones. I've done feature two nights. I've done feature three nights. This will be my first full feature weekend. I can't even say that. Well, yes, it'll be my first full feature weekend on a three-man show at a Funny Bone that I've never been before. That seems like a lot of qualifiers, but if you're a comedian, you'll get that right away, that's not... it's a layered level of complexity. Full feature weekend in a three-man show. I've done feature weeks a number of times as two-man shows at Funny Bones. I did a two-man with Paul Mooney, which was my first club weekend ever in Toledo. I'd been doing comedy for maybe a year, maybe, no, it was probably closer to like 8 months. And it was a great opportunity. And it was also one of those things where I didn't know what I didn't know. I was so green that I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I mean, I knew. First off, when we were walking into the showroom from the green room, we left the green room and Paul Mooney was demanding to be taken to an ATM. No, not an ATM, a Western Union. He needed to get to a Western Union before he went on stage, which is some really black shit. I don't know if you know that or not, but it is. And so we're walking to the showroom, me and Rick, who's the showroom manager at the Toledo Funny Bone. And he's like, so yeah, just like 35 minutes or so, and then I'll light you, and then like just wrap it up within 10 minutes. And I was like, okay, so like a headliner set, feature, a long feature to headline set. And when I booked this, you told me like 10 to 12 minutes. And yeah, that seems legit. I was shitting my pants. I was literally shitting my pants because I had like maybe 15 minutes worth of jokes, five of which were funny. And I got out there and I just did crowd work. I just kind of went out there and did crowd work. And it went really well. I mean, it went so much better than it's supposed to, that I realized there was a lot less to be afraid of. And then we did a second show and it did not go nearly as well. I got a lady yelled out next. And so my response was like, don't let her get control of the audience. And so like my response was like, I think I just like called her a bitch. I said like, look, bitch. And then the audience turned on me. And here's what I learned about that was she was right. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't really have the right to call her a bitch because I wasn't being funny. You know what I mean? I might have been getting a few laughs, but I wasn't being as entertaining as I should have been. But what I did after that, I mean, I don't know if I recognized that, but I recognized that the audience was not with me calling her a bitch. And so I had to backtrack a little bit. I said, look, I know I am not who you came to see. You know, but you guys are going to have to realize that I don't want to be out here any longer than I have to. And I know I have to stay out here because Mr. Paul Mooney does not do anything until he's ready. And that got a bit of a laugh and a little bit of respect. I said, and hell, one day you'll be able to, you know, if you see me on TV, you'll be able to say, I saw that guy way before he was ever funny. And that got him back on my side. And then I just went into the crowd and started talking about them. And I think I won him over. But it was my first club weekend, my first time ever doing more than like 10 minutes of comedy, and I think it was the most money I'd ever been paid in comedy at that point. In fact, at the end of the weekend, they even gave me a little bit extra, which has never happened since, without me asking for it. Like when I did a two-man show, it was always still just MC money, unless I was at Toledo. They've always taken care of me at Toledo. The most they paid me the most. Like just without me asking ever, always. And it's not like it was like not deserved or whatever. It was during a two-man show, but the Paul Mooney thing was one of those where they felt like I went above and beyond the call of duty by kind of handling whatever he needed. So like he had a handler with him, but like I was his handler's handler. So if they needed food or any drinks or anything like that, I kind of just because they were kind of standoffish to the staff and very friendly to me. So it was just easier for me to deal with it. And that's when I learned the lesson of always being of service. So what I try to explain to comics that are going into the MC phase of their career is that as the MC, your job is like a ringleader slash concierge slash invisible man. You know what I mean? It should be that type of situation where it's like you don't need anything to eat. Unless nobody gets to really see you ordering that food. And then what you eat should be like whatever's on the slave menu. I'm not saying just eat appetizers, but I try to limit it to the cheapest thing that I could eat for dinner, which is usually a burger. Sometimes I just get a salad, which is even cheaper. But as an MC, you should not be taking advantage of any of the comps, especially not before the show. Now, if after the show you're at a club that pours loosely and they're offering drinks, have a couple drinks, but don't get wasted. It's such a bad look. And yeah, just don't take advantage of the comps. Here's one thing I can't stand, if you're a comic and you're listening. If you're going to be in the green room, that is totally your right. I mean, I would say this even if I was headlining and I had TV and movie credits. The MC should be able to hang out with the feature act and the headliner in the green room, unless the headliner shuts the green room down completely with his entourage or guests or whatever, or just is that type of headliner that says. But for me, I'd like to think that I'd always be sharing the green room with the other comics. With the other comics. That means no wives or girlfriends hanging out in the green room during the show, before the show, after the show. If they come in to say hi, it should be because you asked in advance, do you mind if I bring my girlfriend back to say hi real quick or whatever? And then she's going to go back out into the showroom. It is not for public consumption what goes on in the green room, which is usually just guys sitting there watching TV or looking at their phones. But the minute you introduce a foreign pathogen into this environment, it becomes unstable because the headliner doesn't want to tell the MC, hey, get your bitch out of the room or get your, dude out of the room or whatever it is. They don't want to come off as a dick usually. And so then even if they tell the manager, like, yo, I want to shut the green room down or whatever, then it still comes across as being a dick. So what I'm saying to you is, if you're an MC, if you're a feature act, it's the headliner's green room, right? Recognize that and don't introduce any foreign pathogens into it. That means if the headliner doesn't smoke and it's a smoking green room, don't smoke in the green room. Even if it's your home club and you're like, well, we always smoke in here, this is where we smoke. If the headliner doesn't smoke and that's where he has to hang out, be respectful of that because it's his show. I'm gonna get off the soapbox now and get back onto another soapbox and talk about the one thing I experienced this week is that if you don't have the three S's of shows down, your show is going to be a little bit less than. So if you're in a venue and they don't have lighting down, if they haven't nailed the lighting down to a factor of like on a scale of 1 to 10, the lighting is a 9, it's that good, you're going to have some issues with your show. If they can't see you, you're going to get a fraction of the laughs that you should be getting. Same with sound. If they can't hear you, you're going to get a fraction of the laughs that you should get. Now, I've been at shows where the sound system quit and you had to project and it still went okay, but not great. Seating. That's why I call it the three S's: sight, seating, sound. So with seating, as close to the stage as possible, at all times. The further you put a comedian from his audience or her audience, the from their audience. I'm trying to get rid of gender-specific pronouns. Is that what it is? Did you see how my voice dropped when I said gender-specific pronouns? I don't even know if that's what they're called. But yeah, I don't know. It's not me trying to be politically correct. It's just me attempting to be politically correct. I'm not trying. I'm attempting. I don't know what that means. The further you put the audience from their comedian, is that better? I reversed it. If you don't like it, then we'll just disagree to agree. The further away the patrons of said comedy show are from said performer, the more I think that's one of the biggest drops in percentage of laughs that you're going to get. So much so that I think you could measure it in feet. Just like you could measure laughs in lumens, you can measure laughs in decibels and proximity. And somebody should do a study of that. Maybe when I get rich one day, I'll pay for a study to figure out what the percentage of laughter lost is by lighting, percentage of laughter lost by sound quality, and percentage of laughter lost by proximity to the stage. Did I start with proximity? Sight, sound, seating? Either way, you get the picture, guys. I'm trying to do this in one take without editing, so give me a break. All right. Bert Kreischer this weekend, Virginia Beach. Tickets are on sale now. We expect every show to sell out. Bert has never been to Virginia Beach before. I mean, I think he has been there before, but not as a headliner, at least not in like 4 or 5 years to that area. every year something's happened and the show ended up getting moved or canceled or postponed. But all systems are a go. It is 2 days away. I will be there with my hero. So if you are in the area, please come out and listen to Bert, witness the Bert. It's an experience. It's like Bert Kreischer is to comedy in a, and I don't want to overstate this, but he's sort of like what Jimi Hendrix was to rock and roll. And it's not that, I think maybe Jimmy was a little bit more respected in his time, but what people, rock and roll is a wonkier business than comedy, and that comedy is very backstabby, and the more success you have, the more detractors you're going to have as your peers. But Bert is a different kind of comedian, the same way that Jimmy was a different kind of rock and roll star. And you have to kind of witness it to see it. But when I say that a lot of the cues I take in my career and a lot of the lessons that I've learned, things that I've found to be very, very useful to me and serve me very well in this very short journey that I've had in my career, I learned them from just hearing Bert talk about it. Just hearing Bert talk about it. One of the things he said is, you know, if you're in a room of celebrities and, you know, you're a comic and you deserve to be in the room, but maybe you don't deserve to be like leading the conversation and you're wondering, like, am I talking too much? If you're wondering, am I talking too much? You're probably talking too much. And he said, the rule of thumb is this: say half of what you think you should say. So if you think like I'm in this room and I should be having something to say, he was like, just half that number. Just ha every time you think, just wait and then say something else later. He's like, and that'll be plenty. He's like, because the worst thing you could do is talk too much when there's three or four other guys that know each other better than they know you and they're talking. And I thought that's a really good way to approach it because you don't want to alienate yourself from that conversation and being respectful of people that know each other better than you, they know you. And the hard part is, like, and he even addressed this, is that if you listen to somebody's podcast, you feel like you know them more than they, you know what I mean? It's like they're, it's almost like they're talking directly to you and you're nodding your head like, yes. You know what I mean? So when we meet one day, which I would like to say that, like, I would like to be able to say that, how there's like tens of ones of you right now listening to this podcast. But if I could take a screenshot of when I get to the point of having, you know, 500 average first week downloads, once I get to that, I would like to take a screenshot of all those people or all the followers, the first 500 followers or something like that, and make it my mission to try to at least meet all those people in person, whether it be at a show or on my way to a show where I stop off in your town and just stop off to shake your hand to say thank you for listening. Does that sound cheesy? I don't know. To me, that's how grateful I am that anybody would even listen to this show. I feel like, you know, some of the more popular episodes get up there in the downloads, but I still, the most like heartwarming thing that ever happens is when somebody says, I love the podcast. I listened to the podcast. That was a great episode. I laughed. Needed to hear that. I was working out and I was giggling and it made it all the way through my workout. That's really the only goal for me because that's what I need a podcast to do is make it through my hour-long workout. And my hour-long workout starts with like a 20-minute warm-up of me drinking coffee and checking my phone and downloading the podcast or music that I'm going to listen to if it doesn't make it through. And it's probably about 20 minutes of farting around. And then probably a good 10 to 15 minutes of cool down. So maybe it could involve a good 20 to 30 minutes of hard working out, but there's a lot of prep in that. So an hour-long podcast is like the perfect length of time for me. And it may or may not be the perfect length of time for you. If I'm the only podcast you listen to, I highly recommend that you go visit Bert and BertBertBert.com and listen to his podcast. The other podcast that I always recommend is Pete and Sebastian, which I'm realizing the importance of updating your content on a regular basis right now because Pete and Sebastian is like in my top three favorite podcasts of all time. And they usually would drop on Friday. And here we are Tuesday. I still haven't seen anything from them. And it's not like I'm not going to listen, but I do feel slighted. And I don't know why that is. I wanted to do this podcast yesterday and have this out yesterday, and here we are at like it's like almost 11:30 my time on Tuesday, and I was gonna do a bunch of other things, and I was like, no, I gotta get this out before Wednesday. And so my target is Monday or Wednesday drop. And if I do Monday, then I'd like to also do one on Friday because I find that by Friday, I've found more things to talk about. I think the more regularly I do the podcast, the better I become at it. But this last week was grueling. I mean, grueling. But I should have found time to interview Steve and make that part of it. The problem is that when you're in the car with somebody that much, the time you spend away from them becomes just as valuable as the time that you spend getting to the gig. And that's really all that happened. It wasn't that I didn't want to interview him. It was more that the time we spent apart became so much more important. All right, let's land this plane. Where are we at? Oh, yeah, we're doing fine. Big shout out to Stella. Stella M, Pat M, John C. Thank you guys for your patience. Your shirts are on the way. And yeah, thank you for your interest in the podcast. Send me a selfie of you wearing the shirts, and we'll go from there. I want to give a shout out to my insurance company, UMR. I think that's United Healthcare, some sort, some branch of United Healthcare. Man, I've had to talk to them for a couple times for the injuries that I've had in my life recently, and just the most pleasant people here in Columbus. On the phone every time I talk to him, it's painless. And I've also taken it on to be the best guy that I can be when I'm talking to a customer service representative because I feel like so many people are just disrespectful on the phone because they can be. It's like the way you drive. Some people drive like an asshole because they're in this box and nobody can see them or touch them. So I've taken it on myself to be as pleasant as I can be with people on the phone because I know when I hear them open up, like, man, I'm glad you called us. That's the way I want to leave a customer service interaction on the phone. When the customer service person says, thank you for calling, and they mean it. You know? And I think that it's not me being fake. You know what I mean? It's just me being myself. That's how I want to be treated. So I'm going above and beyond and treating people as good as I can in that situation. And maybe part of it is because I've had telemarketing jobs. I worked in a restaurant where part of the job was just answering the phone. And I think I made a game out of it then to be as pleasant as I possibly could be. And I'd also try to get laughs on the phone when I would, when I was on the, you know, if you can get a laugh on the phone from a stranger that's hungry, I don't know if there's any better training than that. You know, they didn't call for laughs, they called for food. But I'd send them on their way. Feeling a little bit better for having called. I'm gonna go ahead and land this plane right here, guys. I'll play a clip from the show in Lemoyne slash Keystone. And this is my catchphrase. If I had a catchphrase for any show, this would be it. I love you guys. Stay totally unrelated.
Your door to your room in a hotel opens up to an interior hallway, right? That has light. Heat. In a motel, it doesn't matter what the chain of the motel is, it doesn't matter the city, the state. That front door opens up to Detroit, okay? There's pimps and hookers out there. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. Are you from Detroit, ma'am?
Well,
then you should shut the fuck up, okay? I've been to Detroit very recently and it's fucking terrifying.
He looks mistaken, like sunbound wind. She whispers it's okay, we'll dance the night away. But when I see the rain coming, it sings the sweet song. And I know there's no reason Friday night. But I feel so lonely inside, I don't know what to do. But I'll be here when the sun comes shining. There's a whisper in the darkness. Whispers it so